But there were things that could not be avoided forever, obstacles that could not be gotten around. The specter of what the Yankees had done to Virginia, to the rest of the South, would always be between them. Maybe someday, long after the war was over, things would be different. But not now. Certainly not now. And probably not for a long time to come.
"I'm sorry," she whispered.
"So am I." His hand found hers and squeezed it briefly. The touch was fleeting, but Cordelia knew she would never forget it. Joseph turned away and walked toward his horse. He jerked the reins loose from the bush where they were tied, swung up into the saddle, and gave Cordelia one last regretful glance before he turned his mount and rode away.
"Damn good riddance," Henry said.
"Oh!"
Cordelia exclaimed again. She turned toward her brother and struck out at him, swinging a tightly clenched fist that caught him in the chest with enough force to make him take a step backward. He looked at her in surprise and anger.
"What in blazes was that for? You had no right."
Cordelia tried hard not to cry, but a single sob escaped.
"You had no right to do that.
You can't be that upset because I ran him off. He's a Yankee, for God's sake.
He's a fine young man, and he was kind to us. You've been eating the food he brought, too."
"Don't think I don't know it," Henry grimaced. "Just the thought of it makes me sick."
"You'd rather starve to death?"
"Then take charity from a Yankee? You're damn right I would."
Cordelia shook her head. She was wasting time, energy, and breath arguing with Henry. He would never understand. He had too much bitterness now, filling him up until there wasn't room for anything else. He couldn't admit that there might be good in anyone, especially a Yankee. She saw it in his eyes. He was just like Titus now, cold and hard and lifeless inside. The pang of regret she felt from the double loss she was suffering stabbed deep inside her. She had lost a friend in Joseph, and a brother as well. Henry had been claimed by the pain that consumed his soul, and there was nothing Cordelia could do about either one. Lieutenant Keller looked like he was ready to cloud up and rain all over somebody when he got back to Culpeper, McCafferty thought. Things must not have gone well out at the Brannan farm. That was just too damn bad, he told himself, with a sly smile. Keller wasn't going to get any more chances at the girl, not after today. McCafferty would see to that. The time had come for him to put his plan into action. He had modified it somewhat, because the more he thought about it, the less reason he could see why he couldn't just take Cordelia Brannan with him. Wherever he wound up going, she would sure as hell make the journey more enjoyable. And if she slowed him down too much, well, once he'd taken his pleasure with her, a knife across her throat would dispose of that problem in a hurry. Like Keller, McCafferty was from Ohio, but unlike the studious lieutenant, the sergeant had grown up in Cleveland, orphaned at an early age and living on his own. In his youth, he had earned a living unloading iron ore from the boats coming down from Lake Superior, through Lake Huron, and onto Lake Erie. The iron was bound for blast furnaces on the flats along the Cuyahoga River. That occupation had hardened McCafferty's muscles, and also taught him that life was hard, as hard as the iron that came from those furnaces. If a man wanted something, he had to take it for himself, because sure as Hades, nobody was going to give it to him. The war had been a way for him to get away from the docks, and besides, he hated those damned rebels. Bunch of lazy, no-good peckerwoods who sat around doing nothing all day while they made their darky slaves do all the work. The filthy bastards deserved whatever they got, according to McCafferty's way of thinking. The problem was that he didn't like the army any more than he had been satisfied with his life in Cleveland. He still had to put up with being bossed around all the time. Only now, the ones giving him orders were a bunch of soft-handed sons of bitches who had the authority to do so only because somebody had decided to call them officers. They weren't like the hard-fisted bosses back on the docks who had earned the right to command because they knew how to stand up to life and smash it in the face. McCafferty could never respect a man like Keller, with his book learning and his even-handed treatment of the rebels. So it was time to leave, simple as that. There was a chance the army wouldn't even bother coming after him. Washington had more to worry about than one deserter.
They had all those rebels to take care of, and today they would be even more distracted than usual, because the paymaster was coming in on the afternoon train.
McCafferty hated to leave without collecting what was coming to him, but his best chance to slip away unnoticed would be when the men lined up to receive their pay. They wouldn't be thinking about much of anything else.
Keller went to his tent without saying anything to the sergeant, probably to brood about the Brannan girl.
McCafferty saddled his horse and ambled down toward the depot, leading the animal. The tracks of the Orange and Alexandria Railroad ran down to Culpeper from Manassas Junction. Now that the Federals controlled this entire area of Virginia, the trains were running regularly again, bringing supplies to Culpeper. The railroad brought the paymaster as well.
McCafferty was at the station when the train rolled in on schedule, and a colonel stepped down from one of the cars, carrying a heavy leather pouch, followed by two guards. They were met by more soldiers, who escorted the paymaster and his guards to the big red brick house that had been commandeered to serve as army headquarters.
McCafferty watched them start down the street. He wasn't the only one. All the troops who were out and about turned to let their eyes follow the man who brought their money.
McCafferty swung up into the saddle and rode out of town without anyone paying the least bit of attention to him. Even the pickets were distracted and careless, as men usually were when they were posted behind the lines and in no real danger. That was exactly what McCafferty had been counting on. He should have gotten away clean.
"Sergeant? Sergeant McCafferty."
With a curse, McCafferty reined in and hipped around in the saddle to see who was hailing him. He thought he recognized the voice, and as he saw the lieutenant galloping after him, he knew he was right. Why hadn't Keller stayed in his tent?
"Sergeant, where do you think you're going?"
Keller asked as he rode up alongside McCafferty.
McCafferty gestured vaguely. "I'm just out for a short ride, Lieutenant. It's been a while, and I figured this horse of mine needed to stretch his legs a bit."
"You shouldn't be leaving town without authorization."
McCafferty held in a contemptuous snort. Keller was a fine one to talk about leaving without authorization. The lieutenant slipped away from headquarters several times a week to spark that Brannan gal and sneak food to her family, a family of Rebs at that. But he didn't want to argue with Keller. That would just take up valuable time, and now that McCafferty had decided to make his move, he didn't want to waste a single minute. He glanced around. The settlement was behind them, but some of the buildings were still visible, about a quarter of a mile away. No patrols were in sight. In fact, McCafferty didn't see a soul anywhere. His hand dropped to the bayonet that was sheathed at his waist. Lowering his voice in a conspiratorial tone, he said,
"You see, Lieutenant, the truth of it is,
Frowning, Keller leaned closer to hear what he had to say. McCafferty leaned toward Keller, too, and casually slipped the bayonet from its sheath. Taking the lieutenant completely by surprise, he lashed out, sinking the blade into his midsection. Keller opened his mouth to yell, but before he could make a sound, McCafferty released the bayonet and backhanded him across the face, knocking him out of the saddle. Keller toppled off his horse and fell heavily on the ground. The animal shied away. McCafferty was off his own horse in a heartbeat. He dropped to his knees beside Keller, intending to rip the lieutenant's belly open with the cold steel. Before he could do so, the sound of rapid hoofbeats came to his ears. He jerked his head up, eyes wide and frantic. He caught a glimpse of movement through some trees to the south. That would be a routine patrol riding in, he thought. They weren't looking for him, yet. But in a matter of seconds, they would emerge from behind those trees and might see him. He leapt up, grabbed his horse's reins, and mounted hurriedly. Catching up the reins of Keller's horse, he kicked his mount into a trot. Keller lay on his back in some tall, dead grass that partially concealed him. It was possible no one in the patrol would notice him, at least not right away. McCafferty cast one final glance at the lieutenant. Keller was unconscious, and his face was deathly pale. The front of his uniform was sodden with blood. He might even be dead already, McCafferty thought. If not, he would be soon. The fleeing sergeant didn't waste any more time getting away from there. He didn't rush, though, because he didn't want to draw attention to himself. If anyone in the patrol saw him, he wanted them to think he was just a trooper leading a spare horse, bound on some innocent errand, no doubt carrying out orders. That was the impression he wanted to give. It must have worked because no one came after him. He rode at least half a mile before pausing to look back. No pursuit was in sight. Now he could risk a gallop, and he urged his horse into a run that took him toward the Brandon farm. Now to get that red-headed girl and put this part of the country and the damned war behind him forever. Abigail and Louisa must have wondered what had happened when Henry and Cordelia came back to the house with such grim, angry looks on their faces. Neither of them volunteered to explain, however, and for once Abigail suppressed her curiosity and didn't demand to know what was going on. Cordelia was grateful for that much, anyway. She was in no mood to tell her mother about Lieutenant Joseph Keller. Abigail would never understand. To her, all Yankees were alike, enemies to be hated and despised, and Louisa was too meek to pry into something that didn't concern her. As the afternoon went on, Cordelia found herself wishing she could talk to someone. Louisa already knew about Joseph's clandestine visits to the farm. Cordelia had had to tell her so she would have an ally in concealing the secret from Abigail and Henry. So when she saw Louisa going into the barn late that afternoon, Cordelia gathered up her courage and went after her. Abigail was in the kitchen. Cordelia didn't know where Henry was. He had spent a couple of hours splitting wood, probably to work off some of his anger and frustration by swinging the axe as hard as he could. Now he didn't seem to be anywhere around, though. Cordelia suspected he was walking in the fields or the woods trying to calm down. She understood the feeling. Right now, she wasn't sure if she would ever be calm again. She stepped into the barn, feeling a chill go through her as she moved into the shadows. The air was cool, even on sunny days now, and soon there would be frost on the ground in the mornings. The seasons were changing, as change they must. Nothing ever stayed the same. That was a bittersweet inevitability when times were good, but in times of trouble, change sometimes brought relief.
Louisa, Cordelia said, not seeing the older woman, are you still in here?
She supposed Louisa could have gone out the back of the barn. She stopped short as she saw something on the ground in front of her. Her eyes were still adjusting to the difference in light, and at first she couldn't make it out. Then, with a startled gasp, she realized the huddled shape was Louisa, lying unconscious on the dirt floor in the aisle that divided the barn. Cordelia hurried toward her friend. She had taken only a couple of steps when someone grabbed her from behind, an arm looping across her chest so hard she couldn't breathe as a hand clamped roughly over her mouth to stifle any outcry. She felt herself pulled against a broad, muscular body as a voice hissed in her ear.
Take it easy, gal. You and me, we're going for a little ride.